about as large as this four rooms across.
What do you mean, two rooms?
Some of them were small, some were large. Some had maybe, you walk in the front and...
They had a pot belly stove in the corner. They had a cooking stove.
Stove in the kitchen area and the table. And on the other side maybe was two bedrooms. And then they had the outdoor toilet. They were on the lot, right back of the house. And they were maybe 50 or 60 houses up there. It was a wooded area.
But was it right next to the mill, or was it
something? It was right off from the mill. Uh-huh. You know where Walmart is?
Yeah.
The houses was back of there.
So there was a little road going back from the mill?
Yes.
Up there?
That's right.
Who has one of those houses that came off of that quarters there when they moved them? Didn't the Moultries have one right there on the Peanut Road? Right next to Edgar?
Yes.
That was one of those old houses.
Uh-huh. And they kind of renovated it.
Yeah.
And where was the commissary?
Did you notice where not Kentucky, it's the eating place there on the corner where you turn to go just before you get to Walmart. Burger King.
Uh-huh.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
That's where the commissary was, in that area.
But
there.
Now, in relation to the mill, was that going to be right next to the mill, or was it up by the
Right near
quarter?
The mill. Right near the mill.
Okay.
And the people came out and went there and purchased their groceries, all their needs.
Now, were they paid, and it came out of their check, or were they paid in, what do they call it, scrip?
It came out of their check.
So they kept an account there?
They kept an account there.
I bet they didn't always stay ahead either.
No.
No. I'm pretty sure.
And as one lady told me, see, sometimes we wouldn't have enough to pay this week and we let it run on to through the next week.
Right.
But they would always let you have food.
Because
you were working for them, you know, and they knew you would get their money.
Well, a lot of it sounds, I mean, especially if you lived in the quarters, I mean, just the name quarters, it has all this slavery overtone, you know.
Yes.
I mean, quarters, and you know, if you got behind on the commissary, you weren't going anywhere.
You weren't going anywhere, that's right. You didn't have nothing to go with.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I said I wish I had kept better records of everything that went on.
You never know when things are going to happen like this, but I go back a lot of times and I look at people that I know that had hard times coming up, and I look at the way that their value system and most of them are usually very successful.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Because they realize the value of everything that's around them, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're conscious of it. Because I tell you what, a lot of people that came out of their quarters are very successful people there.
How about that?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, and their parents had to pay the cost for that, but...
Right.
But, you know...
But they went on and they finished high school and some of them went to college.
A lot of them came back and helped their parents. Some of the parents that weren't able to get out of it, I think about the Johnsons, the Owens, and all of them. Uh-huh. They went to New York and got jobs in the transit system and the post office. And they sent money back and built brick homes for their parents.
Now, was it all families, or was there also like a single men's, were there single guys over there?
There were a few single guys.
But not many. It was mostly
not
families.
Not many. Mostly families.
And if the the women mostly stayed at home, or did they work out?
The women were cooking in the kitchen, you know, domestic work.
And for not for the factory, but for the
some
white
worked
people
for
in town.
White people in town.
Uh-huh.
And the Green Brothers.
Uh-huh.
They were quite a few of them up there. Mr. Sidney Thornton and all of those.
What, was there a school? Where did the children go to school?
They went to school here in town.
Uh-huh.
They had, the high school was Bladen County Training School.
Right.
and it went to 12th grade.
Yeah.
And was there a separate church up there, or did they go to church in town?
We had three churches, the Presbyterian, the Baptist, and the Methodist, were colored churches. And then a few others sprung
up
from that.
Storefront churches and
things.
Yeah, yes.
You had, St. James, now it was called, Five Baptized?
Mm-hmm.
Back during that time, and I remember they didn't have about three or four members. You know.
Right.
And quite a few churches, you know, started from there. There's the Holiness Church up there by Miss Georgie Lewis. What is that called? Firstborn?
That's not Firstborn, that's a...
That's not Firstborn? It's a Holiness Church.
It's a Holiness Church. You know.
But
think
the three
of the name.
Major churches in the town was the Presbyterian,
the
Baptist, and the Methodist Church.
Second Presbyterian, First Baptist.
And all of those have
Mount
churches
Zion.
Too.
I bet they do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I bet they do.
Yeah.
And the quarter was all black.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think a few white live. Seemed like a few white people live kind of distance, you know. From
there was a little separation.
Yeah, a little separation. That's right.
And were most of the workers at Green Brothers black? Was it?
The most of them were black, but there were some white. A few white.
Were there some jobs that were black jobs and some jobs white jobs?
Yes.
But would you know what kind? I know it's hard since you didn't work there. But.
Well, you would call them the foremen. The white were foremen. They were old, the group, different groups.
Uh-huh.
They didn't have any black foremen. They had white foremen.
Uh-huh. So, but all the sawmill workers, the loaders, the stackers, the logwoods people, they would have all been black.
Black, that's right.
And were most of the people up there local, or had they come from other places?
They were from Kelly and Clarkton, Tar Heel, different places.
You'd said that when they first came here, that they brought some people from.
They brought some people from Alabama. That's right.
So
and they had organized, right?
Yeah.
And they were sure to build those houses. So they had somewhere to stay.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Them shot up. Were they strict with the workers in the quarters? Were there a lot of rules over things they could do and not do?
They went where they wanted to go, I think.
What about for socializing or for.
They came to Newtown, didn't they?
Yeah. Most of the kids that were in school with us, they all did the same things that we did, because a lot of Tootsie, James Fred, Willifred Irvin, all of those guys were out of the quarters.
Yeah.
When you were a child or at this time, the people that lived in the quarters, did they have a reputation? Were they treated any different by the
people in the community? Well,
or did they have a different reputation?
Well, it was like a thing that even in the black community, we had more businesses in the black community than we have now.
I'm not surprised.
And and there was a lot of things that we could depend on from the black community back during that period of time, because of the fact of the closeness of people being together.
Right.
I have papers right here right now where my grandfather and three other men went out and bought a tractor, hay baler, and a peanut picker. And they were talking about $1,200 back during that time. I'm talking about 40s.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And they could do things, and they had a theater, black theater back during that time. We don't even have a theater in Elizabethtown now.
It was named the Lincoln Theater.
The Lincoln Theater. Mm-hmm. That was what they turned into the sewing factory after it closed down.
Right. Uh-huh.
But see, what happened, they had the Lincoln, the Row, and the Clark Theater.
Three
theaters in this town. Mm-hmm. And what happened is that the Lincoln Theater opened up, and they had a price, and all of the other theaters dropped their price 3 cents cheaper. And ran
That's
out
true.
Of business, you know?
Yeah.
And so... So then what they did, they took the strategy and they tried to start the sewing factory. Well, they started the sewing factory. The sewing factory was successful for years. But it started off like each person would have to buy shares, $10 shares, in order to start the factory and open the factory. They had like, I remember Mr. Joe Lewis had a meat, Mr. Allen had a meat store. Where they, you know, had people going in and buy beef and all that. Then you had your barber shops, you had the restaurants.
Right. So when something like the strike comes along, the people here in town at least could draw on all this to some degree.
That's true.
In a way that the people in the quarters. Right.
Well, the people in the quarters was considered as the poorest people in town.
Right.
That's the way that even in the black community as children growing up, if you came from the quarters, you was known to be poor.
Was it more than poor though? Did it also mean that in a rougher part of town? Did people look down on
the children?
There
wasn't a lot of crime there now.
From
it wasn't a lot.
No, not crime.
Crime. It's worse now.
There wasn't a lot of crime there. It was just that those people were poor and more controlled. You know, you knew that they weren't going but so far, you know, because of the fact of the kind of control they had. When you get into the churches and I guess probably before Green came that there was a system that, you know, when you had the churches and people come together, they had a free spirit that they could do certain things. And I think what happened when that mill came, that mill kind of changed the whole setting because it brought in so much resources into the area. And then it brought a lot along with it. Then the area had to feed into the resources that it bought, which was the money. So then the area became a support system because we don't have to carry this load anymore.
Right.
All right. And then the more things changed and the harder things got, then people began, they didn't go to the farm and the plant, and to the mills and the little things like that anymore. They started leaving the area and going out of town.
Yeah.
I go back to my class, man. Half of the class that graduated with me don't even live here.
Yeah, I bet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He said, how old are you now, 60?
I'm 60 years old now. And you know what, man? I almost go in tears. You know, I think about it. I get really emotional when I think about it. And the tears are not nothing to deal with hate. It's just to deal with how defenseless people are when they don't know no better,
right?
You know, and even if you walked out there right now and you said you could be, from the level that you know the society, in order to be productive and to be able to do things out there in the world, and ain't nobody gonna feed into the less of anything. They gonna feed into the most of it,
right?
The best of it, you see. Mm-hmm. And see, until people start thinking that way, they can never be that way, you know. And I think that right now, I think that people, man, there's so much potential in this town, man. I walk around sometime and I look at people with the potential, man, and it's just walking around dead.
Yeah.
You know. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what to do to bring some of this stuff out because it will benefit everybody.
Right.
It'll benefit everybody here.
But what year were you born?
1919. There you go. No, you're young. You're not even 45 yet, are you?
38.
I knew you weren't.
38.
You're young,
still got
man.
A lot to learn.
Oh, you're young man.
And when I listened to the interview with that Will did on the way here, you said that it was that it was rough during the strike.
Yes.
How exactly did you mean that?
Jimmy and Minnie, that was their names, the strike, the union leaders.
Uh-huh.
They live here with me. They slept right in that room.
They did?
Mm-hmm.
How about that?
It was rough. And Jimmy, they went out one night. Jimmy got his leg broke. And we stayed up when they called and say that Jimmy was in an accident. But somebody broke his leg, but they didn't, I don't know who it was. Some of the men broke his leg.
But it was broken because he was a union organizer.
Yes, union organizer. And I slept, but I would be listening all night for whatever went on, because it lasted. Do you have a record on how long it lasts?
Yeah, I think it lasted a year.
It lasted a long time. And my husband never did get back there. He went out, when he left, he went to McLean Wholesale in Lumberton.
Yeah. So you were staying up late?
Yeah.
Listening for...
Anything might happen, you know, listening for something to happen.
I imagine that your husband was prepared if something were going to happen.
Well,
I mean, I know we're all peaceful, law-abiding Christians, but if someone comes to hurt your family...
Well, you mean he had some protection?
Yes.
Yeah, well, he had some protection.
Yeah,
all
he had was a shotgun.
Yeah, a shotgun.
The time he did that was hunting squirrel.
Right. Yeah. That's right.
Right. But you didn't need, like, regular guards or anything?
No. Where could you find them? Everybody, the policemen were on Green Brothers' side, weren't they?
Yeah.
They weren't going to guard you for anything.
No, I didn't mean the police. I meant just the guys.
Yes.
Oh, you're talking about the guys to guard the places?
Well, like even, you know, Martin Luther King used to have, I mean, Mr. Nonviolence.
Yes.
Used to have armed guards. Mm-hmm. But at his home, he had to look out for his family. I mean,
that's right.
They weren't going to hurt anybody.
But we didn't
unless
have
someone...
anything like that. We didn't have no guards.
Mm-hmm. But you were nervous at night.
You were nervous at night.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of it was that during the time with what they saw, I don't even know that they had a vision of what could actually happen from what was going on during that period of time. I think that what they saw is that they were basically from hand to mouth as far as feeding their families and making sure that their families, you know, had somewhere to stay or to live. And I think a lot of their decisions during that time was made on that, because I don't forget too much of what happened during the time when I was growing up and the feelings that I had. Because I tell you what, when I was young and my grandfather, that given way that he had, because he had all that land and he used to go and I remember when I was like 9 years old, and talking about the tobacco drags, I mean, to the cropping tobacco, all this field out here and where the hospital is was tobacco. He sold that to the hospital, you know. And over there where those houses are there was little corn in there, cornfield. We had watermelons back down here where this house was down here. And when we would go out on the land that we had and we would get a load of watermelons, we'd come back through the neighborhoods and we just put watermelons off. We'd take corn and we'd take bushels of corn and put it on people's porches. And wasn't getting money for it.
Right.
This was the way that people shared in the community.
Uh-huh.
And when I came back from Washington, and I took some things, I went to the church and I said, I tell you what we do. I said, let's get together and let's start a community group, and we'll take the children, and I say, we got land where they're growing up in weeds, and we'll get the guys like Lonnie and Jerry and all those guys that got tracks with William Sheridan, and I said, we'll take them, and we'll disc this land, and we can grow produce, let the children see it grow, and I say, children in the church, and then take little stands and put it on the street and teach them skills, and let them know what it's like to have your own business, but then take the money and let them build their own community center, you know. And everybody said, do you know how hard it is out there? You know. I said, well, I did it when I was a child, you know. And that's the way that, you know, people now, and that's where they've gone to from there to now, you know. And sometimes I think about, well, you know, when, and I think I remember one time when I was in the police department and they was talking about the projects in different cities, and when the government get ready to make changes in those areas, and they got all this land and they spread it out, what they do, they come in and they'll take one third of that land or one fourth of that land, and they put this high rise building, and they would put the number of families in that high rise building as they got spread out all over that area, that 2 mile area, and they do it without training, knowing that in 5 years that high rise building that they made, and they took all of these people, unskilled and untrained people, and put in that one building, that in 5 years it'd be destroyed. And Northwestern University did that.
I bet.
And
how did they get by? I mean, just on the, your husband wasn't working during the strike. None of these people were working.
No.
How did you feed your family?
You know, the union bought food and gave them every week. Food was given to them every week.
Was it enough?
A small donation.
Was it enough food that if you just ate what the union was providing, was that enough to get by?
Well, I think they got enough food, enough to eat. We always had enough to eat. Now, he refers to his grandfather. His grandfather farmed all the time. And my husband did public work, you know. And they followed the grandfather. And that's why he refers to him a lot.
Sure.
And they did things with him on the farm. But the boys were here until they finished high school, and both of them graduated from A&T.
It sounds like this, y'all called him Papa?
That he
was a big influence certainly on you and your brother.
Yes.
Was he also a big influence on his son Thomas? I mean, it's
yes.
Yes.
What kind of man was Papa? Let me talk for, just from her point of view for a minute.
He was a religious man. He was good man, and he went out to do things. He owned a lot of land.
How had he come into that land? I mean, it sounds like he was quite a landholder, and I mean,
he bought it.
The Robinson.
$46,000 for 450 acres in 1942 or somewhere like that. That's nerve, man.
He had nerve. He had more nerve than Thomas. My husband
didn't have nowhere near the nerve my grandfather had.
Because buying that kind of land, you know, for the sake of the interview here, we need to spell out why, because people today won't understand why that takes nerve. You know what I'm saying? That today people might just think it takes money. So would you mind spelling out for me why in 1942 it takes nerve?
It took nerve because you were poor and you didn't have the money to go out to buy it. You had to make ways. And he went out and he bought this $46,000 tract of land. And he bought it from three white men. And he had time to pay for it. He farmed and paid so much a year. And he died before he completed it. My husband finished paying for it.
Now, but it was also nerve in a sense that a lot of people weren't willing to see a black man have
that's
well,
true.
Well, now let me tell you what now.
You know what I mean? That's the kind of thing that gets you.
But now let me just say something to you. My grandfather, I think that he lived a fairly good life because of the fact of the way that he felt about his life and the way that he was respected throughout the community. I mean, you know, there wasn't anybody in this town that would not trust him as far as dealing with him in any kind of a business manner. And I go back and I look at people, man, all the way up to Charlotte, all the way through. And even when I came back here and I was taking a piece of land and I was going to the planning board with it, and even the children of the when they found out, and when I said W.C. McDowell, and when I said that, they said, Mr. Bud McDowell, a great man in the community. I mean, a great man in the community. That's what they, you know, they were saying, you know. And I said, yes, he was a great man. And you know, when I was walking and I was talking to him, you know, but now you won't believe this. His wife was a teacher. He only finished the fourth grade. But that's how much wisdom, and that's how much, you know. And a lot of stuff I know she probably helped him process in processing it, you know, as far as the the educational part of it. But he had so much common sense, man.
Well, and this sense of standing up for himself that Thomas had, do you think he got that from
his father?
His father.
He did. He got it from his father.
But, you know, it was never like in a kind of a threatening way. It was always like, this is what I'm due. That kind of way, when you stand up. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like,
no matter how much he was like, I think it's very unusual that a black man in 1942 gets away with buying 1,400 acres of land from white people. Mm-hmm. I go all over the state. You just don't see that much.
Yeah.
You know, because it's a sign of, you know, what they used to call, you know, not being in your place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't even so much that maybe nobody was threatened by him as a competitor. You know, they weren't worried that he was going to sell tobacco instead of them, maybe, or maybe they were, but maybe they. Even at that aside, it was just a sense of not being in your place. And place at that time in the South was a very important thing. Everybody was supposed to be in their place.
Place, mm-hmm. That's right.
You know,
I understand what you're saying.
And to me, that does take a lot of nerve,
uh-huh.
And something that, you know, I'm not sure I fully understand how he did it.
Mm-hmm. I thought about it, but what you're saying right now, I thought about it. I said, during that time, was he selected as a person that could purchase or buy this? I asked myself that question a whole lot of times, but I never knew the real reason. I would like to know. But
that was like the era, remember, I don't know, like Daddy Grace, do you know, remember
him? Yes, I remember. Okay.
Well, he had to stop driving a Cadillac when he came south, because if the white people in a town saw a black man with a brand new Cadillac driving through town, he might not get out of that town. They kept arresting him.
That's right.
You know, just for having a Cadillac.
He
wasn't speeding limit or anything else.
Right.
You know, so eventually he said, I'm tired of, you know,
yeah.
I gotta preach. And so, you know, if he eventually got like an old Cadillac, you know, even though he probably had four Cadillacs or more.
Or more.
You know, wherever he was, New Jersey or New York, I forget where he came out of.
Mm-hmm.
But so to me, it's a very audacious thing for.
Yeah, because now you people have been stopped in town. Why they have, you know, driving these
same thing. That's right.
Same expensive cars.
That's right. Now they have a new excuse for it. I mean, that's, you know, they say that, you know, a car like that, guy must be doing drugs or something.
Drugs or something. That's right.
But a lot of the same kind of thinking can be behind it,
mm-hmm.
too, and the idea that they bought that much land in 1942.
Yes.
He must have been quite a man.
He was quite a man.
Mm-hmm.
He was.
He had a large impact on my life.
Mm-hmm. I can tell.
Yes, he
did. And, you know, and he had a lot of impact on my life for trying to understand things in their real meaning, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I cherish everything that I received from my parents and from my grandparents because of the fact that I live really at peace with myself, and I live every day thinking that, hey, I realize that it's nothing here that I have that I'm going to be able to take with me, so I have to live the best life that I can live every day that I live.
Sure.
And I think I gained that from, you know, from the family. And those people that were striking never would have gone hungry because of the way that the community was at that particular time. And I mean, people were more together. And you had a lot of people that, you know, I can remember times when we used to go out and come back and there would be things on the porch that people had dropped off from other farms that they had.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Yeah.
And I hear people that grew up with me when they had parents and fathers that were alcoholics, that was going to the bootleggers, spending all their money, and people dropping food off at their houses and how they really live. And I think about Roosevelt Wright when he's talking about his father had that little farm. He was a little bow-legged man, and he was a praying little man. And and this family had 18 children. And Wright today, he'll tell you, he say, man, all of this family feel like my brothers and sisters because we had everything we had in our fields and the chickens that we had in our yard, you know. And I can remember when my grandfather had turkeys and everybody had a turkey for Thanksgiving because he killed a turkey. He gave my aunt Eunice a turkey. He had a turkey. We had a turkey here and people had turkeys. We had cows. We had milk. We made cheese from the milk. We had goats. We had milk from the goats. We had geese. We had hogs. When we killed hogs, we killed 6 or 7 hogs, and we would take them and we would, they would have the big wash, well, the pots that you cooked everything in, you know, and we made the lard, and we had the chitlins, we had the,
wow.
Oh man, we had the whole works. And then we had a smokehouse where he would take it and put it in, and he knew how to do all of that. Even with sugar cane, we had the meal sitting beside the tree. Guy came here wanted to buy it as an antique for me.
I bet it, yeah.
Yeah, and I told him no, because I can remember when that horse had that long pole and they used to grind the sugar cane. We had the big 55-gallon 55-gallon drums of molasses, and I say, man, and you know, like, a lot of people don't realize that I came through a time of seeing all of this stuff produced that we put in our bodies. And I look at all of the people that I see, and most of the people that, where, you know, with the things, the places that I'm affiliated with now, most of them suffer from diabetes. Mm-hmm. And because of the way they ate, I learned to eat from the garden and from the field, you know. I don't suffer with high blood pressure, not diabetes.
You were saying that about the farm that, what were you were going to?
Where were we then? Well, he knows a lot about the farm because they follow their granddaddy a lot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can tell.
Yes, they did.
Well,
where were you? Where did you grow up? In the north?
No, I grew up near Beaufort, North Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
My daddy was a Cherry Point Marine, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. who came from the north and married a local girl.
I see.
Had a small farm, had 44 acres mm-hmm. out in the country. Mm-hmm. And he stayed in the Marine Corps 33 years, mm-hmm. retired as a master sergeant. Mm-hmm. After Vietnam. So he did all those wars. He did World War II and Korea and mm-hmm. Vietnam, everything. But by the time I came along, he had enough seniority to, that they were back at the home place.
I see.
So I grew up out in the country there. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things I like about doing the history of this area mm-hmm. is I am feeling I'm always learning more about my own place and mm-hmm. people's too. Which I like. Now, I'm always surprised at the differences too. You know, every place has its own unique. You know, I've learned Elizabethtown is like a whole different world than New Bern or Beaufort. Or, you know, there's some things that are the same. But,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I was asking. Besides the pay. At the mill, Were there other issues that were real important to your husband and the people striking that you remember?
He was concerned about them not having homes of their own. He was concerned about them not having homes of their own. And,
because, why was that a concern to him?
He wanted them to be supportive of, you know, themselves and have their own home. And he did help a lot of them to get homes.
I guess that was the best way to get independent of the Green Brothers.
Yes. And you know, after that, the Green Brothers, you notice they built all these homes. You know that, what is it called, Jim?
Where Reverend Cotton is now?
Yeah.
I don't know. I never...
Was it Green Acres?
Something like that. They built all those homes.
They built homes then and started selling them to the people. You haven't seen that project.
They went through Farmers Home Administration. Most of those houses were bought through Farmers Home Administration.
Were the Greens the most powerful family in town? I mean, was it a mill town with them at the top, or was it not quite that?
Well, they were millionaires when they came here.
Yeah. So they weren't local either.
They weren't local. They were from Alabama.
Right.
And they were millionaires. And one of the old ladies just died here. She was 104 about a month ago. Wow. My mother died at 102.
Wow.
And Miss Green died just before my mother.
She was 104. And they were definitely the force in town to be reckoned with.
They were, yeah.
Well, they was one of the forces, yeah.
One of the forces.
But I think that I think the Clarks.
The Clarks were rich.
The Clarks had the.
Was that the other male?
No. The Clarks had the. They had the land sold up in the area.
Uh huh.
Even the land that my grandfather has. You know, the only thing that I could put together as a piece, and I've dealt with all of that. Why was he chosen as the person that could have all that land? And knowing that it was set at a price of $3,000 a year that he had to pay at the end of farming season.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I guess he knew that he had to have a lot of support system, not only from, you know, from the white side, but also from the black side.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what made him unique over the years. Yes. Of learning how to deal with, you know, the both sides. Dealing with the black side, trying where they could see that they were becoming productive, because it meant something to them to be able to say, well, I have my own, you know.
Right.
And and then from the other side, I said dealing with the white side, because there had to be a black neighborhood and there had to be a white neighborhood during that period of time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And most of the land that he had ended up becoming the black neighborhood.
Right. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So if you're going to have to deal with that neighborhood, then you got to have somebody that's in that neighborhood that's going to deal fairly and honestly and, you know. Because there's not going to be so much we're going to let you have anyway.
Well, do you think that, the Green Brothers must have got upset when the strike happens, right?
Yeah, they got upset. Mm-hmm. They got them so upset nobody wanted to talk about it. They wouldn't tell.
You mean no white people would talk about it, or just the Green Brothers?
The workers wouldn't talk about it, you know, about it.
Did they see it? Was part of the? I mean, I'm sure they were against the union, but did they also see it as, or the townspeople in general? I guess, you know, white townspeople, as a racial thing? Like, was it worse because it was black people, black workers? Was that upsetting?
Well, the white people was kind of upset because after the strike, they started growing and they went out to other jobs and they left the kitchens, you know. Uh-huh. And they were really upset. The white people were really upset.
How do you mean that they? Why did that happen after the strikes? Why did the?
Because they went out to other places and other jobs, you know.
Oh, I see.
And the women, that was the only place they worked was for the white people. Uh-huh. They cooked, you know. Took care of the children.
Right.
Yeah, most of the people yes. in the town.
Yes. Everybody was going to somebody's house to do a day's work.
Well, this area, it was an area that's been controlled by this, maybe, I don't know how many now, but quite a few people probably here now that has money. Uh-huh. You know what I'm talking about? That's got right. money. And I guess if I would say name call, I would say the Campbells, the Clarks, the Greens. Who else would be with people with money? Maybe the Kinlaws, you know. Mm-hmm. And those are people that would go all the way back to that, you know, period of time. But then probably this town has grown a lot since that time.
A lot of new money.
Yeah. But the growth of it has been basically controlled too, you know, because of the power structure of where the money is. And I guess if it was in a place like Washington D.C., there would be a lot of questions about why, when you're talking about government money, it's not distributed certain ways.
Of course.
You know.
Yeah.
But then when you don't know and you don't have the information, you don't have the resources, and still that's a problem here.
Yeah.
You know. And one thing that in a black community, and some of the strategies that black people do not even understand, is that when you hear a black man that speaks, it's aggressive in his approach. He's a good man to carry a message to that whole total community that you need when you need a message known. A man that, and see, one reason why I say my grandfather was probably a much more, when I say in the community itself, was much more impact on the community because of the fact that he spoke. You know, when he didn't like things, man, he was there. And even with the schools, you know, I can remember when we had this guy, Dr. DeBerry, man, he was tough. Uh-huh. And when he came here, everything seemed to change. But then the other part of it was this, there was nobody that went to that school that when he saw potential, man, he pushed you. He pushed everybody. And we had, you know, some of the products that you saw that come from the school could go any place and it could compete, you know, because of what he demanded. Right. But,
and at that time, excuse me, most of the teachers that Dr. DeBerry hired were
most of them had white teachers.
And then they started going back to school.
Every year that he would come in, he would look at a teacher, and if she didn't have a master's, she had to get out of here. Wow. You know, because, I mean, he said, we want these kids to learn. And I'm going back all the way into the 50s, and the school was Bladen County Training School. He got the name of the school changed from, he said, it sounds like some place that, like a prison camp, you know. That's what he said. And he says, I want it changed to Bladen Central High School. So I started off in school at Bladen County Training School. But I graduated from Bladen Central High School.
That's great.
You see what I'm saying? And And, you know, some things you think about, you go back through, you know, you can't get caught up on nothing with, you know, you got to, I like to know the past, and I like to be able to, you know, to identify with it, because I don't even know right now, coming back from Washington, because, you know, when I first went to Washington, I went to Washington, and I said, well, I know how the South is.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I, you know, I had to first deal with is where, what I'm going to do. Where am I, you know, with myself and how I feel about things. And some of the best friends I had in Washington, D.C. were white people.
Yeah.
You know, were white guys that I worked with.
Uh-huh.
And we did a lot of things together, you know. And I, you know, when you come back and then you see some
different
of the
world.
Same
right.
types of things, but in a more sophisticated way.
Right.
You know. And sometimes I feel right now, if I wanted to do something, would I have the same chance of doing it as, you know, my white counterpart would? And then, you know, like I said a lot of things. I said even with doing things, and I would come together with a lot of people to do things. If they were really genuine, it wouldn't make no difference.
Right.
You know.
And, well, like I asked for directions to McDowell Street, and I wasn't going to tell her who I was going to see, but she says, you know, why would you possibly be talking about any history on McDowell Street? You know, Chamber of Commerce woman, you know, just like, well, there can't be any history over here. For some people, things don't change.
Mm-hmm.